This is my body, given for you. Warning. Oh, good morning. I'm sorry. I said warning. Let me start that again. Your response, that's good. Good start. Warning, images in this article may be difficult for some readers. When we read that before clicking through to an article on the war in Ukraine or the aftermath of a mass shooting, we feel a mix of dread and sadness. Perhaps we even feel some kind of morbid curiosity, a blend of compassion and adrenaline as we steel ourselves to see something that we're pretty sure is going to upset us, but we're also pretty sure we feel like we need to see it anyway. The passion story should come with the same warning. It's about heartbreak and betrayal. But it is especially hard because of the violence and the bloodshed that are a part of this story. Now, some in our wider church, I've noticed this over the last few years, have expressed concern, understandably, that the more graphically we tell the story of the crucifixion, which is part of what happens today and throughout the week of Holy Week, but the more graphic we are in our description, the more we risk doing harm, the more we risk normalizing violence or even re-traumatizing those among us who have been victims of violence. Now, there is wisdom in that, and it is drawn from all that we know, all that we have learned about how violence really works. Violence tends to beget more violence, regardless of who is harming who, unless we find ways to intentionally and faithfully disrupt that cycle. Now, it helps me to realize that everything that Jesus does, especially in the passage, in the Passion today, does precisely that. Every word, every action, every prayer he prays in the story of the Passion disrupts and ultimately seeks to dismantle the perennial cycle of violence that it seems like the only thing that our world knows. The cycle that we as a people, as a nation, and as a world are stuck in. Now, we think of it, of violence, as an exercise of power. And we see it in the story here. The chief priests, the Roman state, the angry crowd, all of these must have been powerful enough to bring about Jesus' death, right? But perhaps that is exactly backwards. Perhaps when we see or experience violence, what we're really seeing is the absence of real power. And acting out in hopes of reclaiming or recreating a power that someone never had, or maybe the last remnants of something that they're trying desperately to hold on to. In the documentary Navalny, which was made about the Russian dissident a few years before he died in prison, Alexei Navalny survives an assassination attempt and then rallies back. That is the story of the film. And in the last minutes of the film, in a prophetic moment, Navalny looks at the camera. He's looking at us. And he says, "Listen, I've got something very obvious to tell you. You're not allowed to give up. If they decide to kill me, it means that we are incredibly strong. We need to utilize this power, not to give up, to remember that we are a huge power that is being oppressed," his words, "by these bad dudes. It was in Russian. I'm not sure what the Russian translation is. He says, we don't realize how strong we actually are. If they decide to kill me, it means that we are incredibly strong. Suddenly, the story this morning, the story of the power of the state falling on Jesus, hunting him down, and then shaming him on a cross, becomes a story not of a great power flexing, but rather of a weakened system of power revealing its own fragility. In 1970, Hannah Arendt wrote that violence is the very inverse of legitimacy. People and states are more likely to resort to it not when they're triumphant, but when they're bogus. And the harsher they are, the more fraudulent they are likely to be. It's about using fear as leverage. We must remember, she writes, that violence does not depend on numbers or opinions, but on implements that multiply human strength. In the gospel, we have implements like swords that cut off ears, thorns and spears that pierce the body, crosses that raise the vanquished high for all to see. In our world, what do we have? We have handguns. We have all kinds of weapons. We have heavily armed militias. These aren't about power that exists. This is about fear and intimidation, trying to remap the world in somebody else's liking. But, she says, rule by sheer violence comes into play where power is being lost. Where power is being lost. It's about, it's talking a big game. When real power, which comes from compassion and from love, when that has long since faded. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm talking about the illusion of power, but the illusion of power has life and death consequences. This should be pretty clear to us by now. But, and I want you to listen carefully, she writes that to substitute violence for power can bring victory, but the price is very high, because violence is ultimately the seed of one's own downfall. It is not power, but weakness. We see it in that passage in the garden when a disciple, we don't know which disciple it was in this gospel, grabs a sword and then slices off the ear of the high priest's slave. Wow, that was a lizard brain move, wasn't it? Didn't really think through that. Well, of course, he wasn't thinking it through. Whoever he was, what he was trying to do was to compensate for an absolute lack of power with an eruption of violence, perhaps hoping to rebalance the score, perhaps to scare the guards enough to back off, to use bloodshed and leverage as leverage to gain just a little bit back. But that is not Jesus' way. Jesus enters this high-stakes moment, and he brings healing. Placing his hand on the slave's ear and restoring it. Nonviolence is the greater power. But we know that it takes commitment. We know that it takes practice. It takes the discipline of a martial artist. But that's how Jesus enters this moment of tragedy. That's how Jesus transfigures a moment that could have left a lot of bodies on the ground, and instead is a moment of unimaginable healing and transformation. Jesus does not force power over, rather Jesus pours himself out. And I think that is the answer key. It's the Rosetta Stone. It's right there in the reading from Philippians. Being found in human form, Jesus emptied himself He humbled himself and he became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Jesus pours himself out. This is my body given for you. And then finally, when he is dying, he has every moment to be angry or resentful or just overwhelmed by the grief of the moment of what has been forced on him and what he has given up. In this moment of greatest agony, he pours out the last of his spirit with a call to forgiveness. Father, forgive. They do not know what they have done. Or rather, they do not know what strength really is. If they decide to kill me, Navalny says, it means that we are incredibly strong. There is indeed wisdom in questioning the retelling of the story of the Passion, especially with what we know about violence, what it means to hear stories of it over and over again, that it can harm our souls if we aren't careful about it. We have only barely begun to reckon with how cycles of violence shape our lives and keep us stuck in unholy patterns, whether as individuals or as a nation. We are stuck in these patterns and we need to get out of them. And maybe I'm getting older, but at this point, stories of violence, they're not exciting. They just make me sad because I know the pain that is behind it, and I know where it's going to lead. And I feel that sadness today. I can't help it. But to walk through the Passion and to hear what Jesus experiences, what his friends are losing in that moment, I feel it. I feel that sadness. But perhaps that sadness is very much the point. Not so that we can then overwhelm it with triumphalism or easy silver linings about the rough path to Easter. Rather, as long as violence is a way of this world, we know that we need to know that Christ is with us, that Christ suffers with us and through his own suffering transfigures the violence that does so much harm in our world. As long as wars rage in Ukraine and Gaza and Israel, as long as women live with the fear of becoming victims, as long as queer folk fear for their safety, as long as parents must have the talk with their black sons, as long as teenagers shoot and kill one another in libraries and schools, as long as warlords and militias use intimidation and threats to gain that patina of power, as long as all of this is a reality for anyone in God's world, we know that we are profoundly in need of God's action in this world. And that action comes not through overcoming or overpowering or coercion, but rather through self-emptying, through suffering with us, through the compassion and the love that reveals violence for the sham that it is. Jesus took a loaf of bread. When he had given thanks, he broke it and he gave it to them, saying, "This is my body, which is given for you." The Passion is the story of when the powers that be come for Jesus, taking him, taking his body, taking his very life from him. But that isn't what actually happens. They don't take anything. Jesus completely undermines their strength and their power by never letting them take a thing, by force or otherwise. Instead, Jesus gives himself over to them. He gives himself away. He gives his body. He gives his life. And that simple act of sacrificial self-giving tears down the whole system. "This is my body," he says, "given for you.